Well, if you're like me, you spend a lot of time online. It might be for work or sometimes it's for fun. And many of the sites that you visit and the programs that you use require a password. But easy-to-remember passwords are often the least secure if you're like me and sometimes want to, okay, let me go with the easiest possible one. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you along today for what's sure to be a very useful show. We have the folks from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection with us today. They work really hard to keep you and I safe from fraud, identity theft, and a whole lot more. And as always, they have lots of good things to share. Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Thank you for coming by, Sandy.
Good morning, Larry. Nice to be here.
And Michelle Reinen with us as well. She directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and always great to have you, Michelle.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be back.
We have this whole business of, I want to give our listeners a chance to call in, by the way. If you have a question or comment, call us at 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. It seems like so many consumer protection issues today involve online activity, and most of us have had, a number of different passwords that we're using. And I'm wondering about this whole business of security. For the most security, what are the components of an effective password? Sandy, have you?
Well, passwords are like keys to your personal home online. So you should do everything you can to prevent people from gaining access to your password. When you create a password, probably the first thing to consider is how long is it and how strong is it? Passwords should be a minimum of 8 characters and should include a combination of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and symbols, and use them in combination. Make your password something that's unique to your life and can't be easily guessed. It's a really good idea to have a different password for each one of your accounts, which can be, you know, that's a lot to manage. But why would you want to make it easy for an identity thief by guessing right. one of your passwords to immediately have access to all your accounts? It's also important to change your passwords often. And my husband and I have had the same password on our email account now for probably as long as we've had an email account. I hate to admit it, but we finally got with the program and changed our password. So all these things in combination are very, very important. And a password really is your first line of defense against yeah. intrusion.
Can you recycle them from time to time? You know, if there's one you use, then you quit using it.
The companies that have these online accounts that you use have gotten very, very good at ratcheting up their requirements. Usually you can't use a password that you've used in the previous 6 months or
a year.
Many of these now, when you reset your password, you'll get immediate feedback on how strong your password is. So you'll know whether you're creating a weak password or a strong password.
Yeah, and that's really useful, I think, to have. I know some people have thought about storing a document with all their passwords on Google Docs, for example, to be able to access it from anywhere. But then the issue is if someone steals your smartphone, you could probably get into that pretty easily.
Yeah, I would be careful about storing something in the cloud. We all know how awry that can go. It's not a bad idea to write down your passwords and keep them safe somewhere. Don't stick them in your wallet or store them right by your computer. But if your passwords, especially for a smartphone, and you want to lock down a number of apps, there are a number of app managers or password encryptors or password stores that you can use to help you manage your passwords.
Yeah. Talking today with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, dealing a little bit with password safety right now, but certainly there are, unfortunately, all kinds of scams going on of one sort or another, and you may have some questions about something that you've seen or heard or been contacted about, call us at 800-642-1234, email at talk@WPR.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. And Karen in Madison actually has a question, so let's go there. Karen, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I'm looking forward to hearing the whole show. I've got way too many passwords for my liking, but try to keep them current and up to date and everything. It's just, as you say, keeping them all changed regularly is really tough. My question today is more about what one can do or whether this should ever be reported and who to report it to and if there's any way to follow up on cyber predators. I got a call the other day from someone who clearly was, it was an unwanted call, but out of the blue, someone said, your computer is sending messages that need to be halted and there's something going on and it needs to be fixed. And, you know, if I hadn't known better, it could have been a disaster because, as the daughter of elderly parents who often, will answer questions that maybe we don't want them to, this guy was asking me really for information so that he could access my computer remotely. And it was, I played him along for a little while before I hung up to see how much information he wanted to get without me going into any of the steps and stages that he was requesting. But it was clearly someone who wanted me to give them access to my computer.
Yeah.
What do I do when I get calls like that?
Mm-hmm. Michelle, what about it?
Well, the best thing to do is just disconnect the call. I don't engage them because they may use many tricks to try and entice you to turn over information and, you know, teach family members to just disconnect, don't engage. But that's a very common phone call that's making the rounds in Wisconsin right now. We refer to it as the tech support scam, where they tell you exactly what you said, where your computer's sending signals that it has a virus and we can help correct that. They want you to turn over access to your computer so they can load spyware. They can charge you for the correction. They want you to wire them money, send them, give them your bank account information so they can do that. So they're trying to get at your personally identifiable information as well that could be stored on your computer. So it's great to just disconnect, not engage. And you ask about reporting those phone calls. Report them to us so we can get the word out and make sure all consumers in the state know that that scam is making the rounds and put everyone on alert to hang up, because we all kind of lose track of which scam is valid at the moment, and we want to make sure everyone's hanging up on that.
Yeah. Thank you, Karen, for calling. I appreciate your call very much. I want to give Mike and Rice Lake a chance to join us. Mike, hello to you.
Hi. See, I just wanted to contribute to the password discussion a little bit and get people thinking away from the password concept and into the passphrase concept. Password cracking tools available to any hacker online right now can easily break any password less than 10 characters. So you need to get up into the 12 and 15 character password size. And to easily do that, to make it easily rememberable, I suggest either a line from your favorite song or a first line of a children's poem or something, and just string it all together, use some upper and lowercase letters, but really try to get your password up above 12 characters. At that point, it becomes almost unbreakable, or it takes so long to break it that you'll most likely have to change your password again for some other reason.
Yeah. Right. Sandy?
The more complex your password is, the more difficult it will be to crack. A lot of people come up with a phrase that's easily remembered and then use the first letter of each word. So it's not a word. It's a combination of letters and numbers. Something else that is becoming more and more common is two-factor authentication, where, for instance, you log into Facebook on a computer or smartphone that you haven't used before, you'll get a ping back from Facebook to your email with a security code, and you'll need that security code to log in. So many email providers now are providing that additional level of security. So you may want to check to see whether you have that option with your email account.
Yeah, very good points. Thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. Winston in Racine, your turn. Hi, Winston.
Hi. I just want to, first of all, thanks for this opportunity, and it's a great show. I just wanted to make a comment. I had my identity stolen by the fact that I had registered for something on a site, and they actually sent me my password back, clear text, in email, and so my email account got hijacked. So I just wanted to make sure that people understand that they need to have different passwords for different accounts to make sure that when you're registering for something and they send you back your password, that, you know, if it's in clear text, somebody else could read it if they can sniff it through the line. The other thing is that after that I started using a program called KeePass, and that one manages all my passwords, so I don't even know what my passwords are, because I've set it up to be the most complex password that the site will allow, and then I generate passwords whenever required, but I don't even know what the password is because it enters it for me, and then that way I don't have to remember them. I only have to remember one complex passphrase, like the other gentleman said, to actually access the database. And it works on multiple platforms: Windows, Android, iOS for smartphones. So it's great because you can kind of have one place to get all your passwords managed.
Wow. Interesting, Sandy.
Yeah, comment? There are a number of products. KeePass is one. It's very, very popular. Do your research before you start using one to make sure it works for you. But there are just dozens of similar products available out there.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Winston, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Dion in Neillsville, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks. I just wanted to share what I do with my passwords. I bought a little spiral-bound notebook at the dollar store, and I took address labels, cut them small enough so that they'll fit, and I alphabetized my notebook. I allowed 3 pages for each letter, so I've got tabs, basically. And when I want to create a password, I just sit and look at my computer keyboard and just randomly will write down, so that I can keep track of what I'm doing, lowercase, uppercase letters, symbols, numbers. I make no effort to remember them. I just write them down. And when I want to find a password, all I do is, for instance, go to F, and I've got 4 things under my F letter, and I don't have to remember what they are. I can just look them up, and it's so simple. And my little notebook fits right in my computer case if I want to take it with me, and it's absolutely no hassle. Nobody would ever figure these out, believe me.
Ah, what if they had your book, though? What do if would they?
Hey, I'm an old lady. My book doesn't go anywhere but with me.
Well, I don't know. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, I've seen many of those books at the bookstore. Like, they're the old address book, they're the password book now. And if that's what you want to make yours, buy one. It's the same concept of, if you write them down, keep them in a very secure place, hands off with everyone else. If you're someone who can keep it with you and guarantee no one will get it, and you carry it around, that's fine. Just maybe keep it away from the computer case so they're not all attached together. Whatever works for you in keeping the information secure so you can remember it, but that you're regularly updating it and changing it, and that you have different passwords for different sites.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today, well, we're talking passwords a lot right now, but other consumer protection issues as well, with our two guests, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Nobel Prize winning economist Paul Krugman joins Kathleen Dunn for a discussion about the Obama presidency. Once one of the president's most notable critics, Krugman defends him in a recent front page article for Rolling Stone. That's today at 1 o'clock. Right now, though, we're getting some great consumer protection advice from Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. You can join in. I actually have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. Jason in Appleton sent an email, wanted to remind us to sign up for Google two-step verification. Basically, you sign in with your regular password, then Google texts you a six-digit code to enter. You can then have Google remember that code on your computer if you're the only one who uses it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the two-step verification I mentioned earlier, and many of the companies like Google and Yahoo and Facebook are now offering that service.
And it's good. It's helpful.
Yeah. It's another layer of protection for you.
Jim in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am. Just got back from turning off the radio.
Oh, okay. What's on your mind?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I got a call supposedly from the AARP Fraud Watch Network, and it was clearly a boiler room call, and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I'm wondering whether it was itself a fraud, you know, trying to get offer fraud protection services. But since I'm on the do not call list, both federal and Wisconsin, I wondered why I got the call. Even worse, when I sent an email to AARP, essentially they responded by ignoring the question as to whether or not this group was really associated with them, said I should call their 800 number, and that number turned out to be just sales pitches, and the only way to actually talk to a person was to get them to call you back collect.
Ah.
So I'm not very happy with either the phone call I got originally nor the response to it. I'm just wondering if this is common in Wisconsin now.
That's one that we have not heard about. I would appreciate if you would file a complaint and let us look into this to see whether there is fraud involved or figure out exactly what is going on. You can do that by calling our toll-free hotline at 800-422-7128, or you can file a complaint online by going to datcp.wi.gov. But if you do file a complaint, we'll look into this for you and see whether it's legit or fraudulent.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And what was that 800 again? It's
1-800-422-7128. And we have people there answering the phone during regular office hours. If you call in the evening, we'll return your call the next business day.
Okay. But they're there right now.
They're there right now.
And they probably get a few phone calls while you guys are on this program.
They do.
I bet they do. All right. Ann in Green Bay, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. I just wanted everyone to be aware. I received a phone message because I didn't answer the phone. The pitch was that I might have legal responsibility, and they gave a person's name. I did not respond to their callback number, but then they called me again, and I did answer that time. I was in the car, so I didn't pay attention to who was calling me. And then their pitch changed, and they said they were trying to get a hold of this person. I told them that I did not know that person, and they hung up. They were polite-ish, but it was quite obvious they had a different agenda. Just wanted everybody to know.
All right. Is that one that you guys have heard about, Michelle?
Not 100% certain on its origin or what it is, but it sounds to us like it could be a false debt collection scenario.
Oh.
We hear from consumers quite a bit about the threatening phone calls on debt collection, and collection agencies as a whole are regulated by the Department of Financial Institutions, but there are a lot of illegal scams out there where they use threatening tactics, wire the money, or we're coming after you, or we'll put you in jail, or we'll get a warrant, we'll damage your credit. They can get very aggressive in the phone calls. So if you ever think that you have some kind of debt out there, you know, follow up with the actual source. If they name a company or something during a phone call, don't deal with that phone call. Go to the source and find out if there's any debt. You can always run your own credit report to see if there's some credit out there you weren't aware of, and open and follow up with the company directly that way.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Ann, for calling. Appreciate it. And you can join in, too. Open lines get you on pretty fast at 1-800-642-1234. Have you had an issue with your password? Do you worry about the quality of your online passwords? What steps have you taken to make your personal data safe online? Or have you been the victim of a scam or a potential victim of a scam? We'd love to hear about that, too. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Krista on Facebook said, my husband had a weird phone call the other night. Someone said they had something important to tell him and needed the last four digits of his Social Security number to verify. He quizzed them on what it was for, and the woman wouldn't tell him, so he hung up. We're assuming it might have been a scam. The last four digits of the Social Security number, which are, frankly, the last four digits of a lot of, you know, like credit card numbers, for example, are often, you know, I mean, routinely given.
That does sound very suspicious, and your husband was correct to ask the woman for details. And the fact that she hung up tells you that it probably was fraudulent.
Yeah, it was, or he hung up, I think. I can't remember who hung up. But whoever hung up, it was probably a good thing. That's for sure. Joe in West Bend, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My question has to do with a product that I ordered online that you had a trial. They sent you a trial for a minimal fee. And then before you really got through the trial period, they sent you the first product, and they charged your account. And when you returned the product to them, they refused the delivery of it, and then they are not honoring the money-back guarantee.
Mm.
Is there a place to report things like that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you're talking to them.
No. Yeah, you're talking to the right. You come to the right place.
Yeah, that is another situation where we would really want you to file a complaint, give us all the details of the company and what the product was, and provide us any receipts and advertising and promotion that you have, so we can follow up. There's many laws in place about representations, and if there's a trial period, if there's guarantees, if there's return policies in place, all that needs to be honored. So if you could file that complaint, our number again is 1-800-422-7128 to call and get a complaint form sent, or go online.
Do you have it online?
Yep, or go online at datcp.wi.gov.
datcp.wi.gov.
Mm-hmm.
So Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, so DATCP.
That's right.
All righty.
All right. Thanks. Yeah,
thanks.
Thanks a lot. And the online, good if you can do that. Just cuts a step.
That's right. It just makes it faster.
Quicker.
Yeah, because we don't have that mail time.
And let's go to Cheryl next in Cecil. Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
We have been having strange things happen up here in Cecil. For about 2 months, we get phone calls, sometimes 3-4 in a row within 2 hours. And they, for the first one we got, said that it was Reader's Digest, and we won a big prize. And then the second, we hung up on that one, and the second one said that it was Publishers Clearinghouse that we won a big prize. Well, this went on and on with various things, and finally one of them, my husband actually talked to the people instead of hanging up, and then he said he would, he wanted a phone number to call back so he could verify it, so he did. And they said that they never asked for money. They just said, after he called back the number, they said you had to have $300 delivery fee when they showed up at your door, which we thought was very strange. Then he hung up again. And this it stopped being so frequent, but we just got one this week. And it was a different, what it was, yes, you won this.
Prize, yeah.
This prize, yeah. And when I called the sheriff of Shawano County, he said there was nothing they could do about it. And so that's about where I was. But I have to tell you a stranger thing yet. After this happened, I got a call one day from a lady in Cambridge, Wisconsin, and she said, is this Publishers Clearinghouse? And I said, no. And she said, well, they called and said I won a prize, and I had to call this number, and they gave her my number.
Oh, my goodness me.
Yeah, well, it's really strange.
Yeah.
These sweepstakes scams have continued to evolve over the past few years, and they've gotten more and more complex and intricate, and I don't know why the lady was given your number. It could be that the caller used your phone number on the caller ID. That's that wouldn't be surprising at all. But, you know, this is the time of year when people are hoping to get that real call from Publishers Clearinghouse, because I think they award their prize in November or something like that.
And you see the ads all the
right,
time
right.
on television.
So people are very, very hopeful about that. We can all hope that we'll be the big winner. But people continue to be vulnerable to that scam. They a lot of these crooks are operating out of Jamaica and have been for several years. They do target the elderly, and their calls tend to get more and more threatening. So I would advise, if you get one of these calls, just hang up. Don't talk to them at all. If it's the real Publishers Clearinghouse, they'll get in touch with you. And remember, you never have to pay in order to win a prize. The instant you hear that, you know this is a scam.
Yeah.
This is a scam, right? They were very polite and very... in the last one, they asked my husband answered it, and he said, I don't think I'd be interested, but he listened. And then the man said, well, you're not rich, are you? You're poor. You need this.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
These calls have taken many forms over the years, and we even had one where they didn't actually say that you're the winner. They just kind of asked for some general financial information. So, you know, they know whether to... this is somebody they want to focus in on.
Man.
So
there you go, Cheryl. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Tom in Minocqua a chance to join us. Tom, hi. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hello. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Good. Well, yeah, thank you. You have a great show going on there. I just wanted to mention to you that I'd gotten a call several times a couple of months ago, and they were someone calling and giving me saying that they have a notification that has to be sent to me. And they asked me if this is my address. And, of course, they gave an old address that I've never used for about 5 years. And I said, no. And they said, well, are you Tom? And I said, well, I don't know who's calling. Tell me what you're calling about. And they said, well, we have a notification we want to send you. Is this the last 4 digits of your Social Security number? And I said, well, I'm not going to answer that until you tell me what the call is about. And they said, well, we have someone who wants to send you a notification. I said, well, they can send it to me. Who is sending the notification? I'm not going to give you any information until you give me information. And he wouldn't give me any information. He said, well, I can't do that. I will if you give me your Social Security number or if you give me your address or whatever. And I said, no. And this kept happening about, I don't know, 5 times or so in the last couple months. Finally, I guess they just gave up on me because I wouldn't give them any information. But I know it's very true that somehow they collect, and the emails they were giving were old emails that I've had enclosed years ago. So they evidently have contact of all of that and are trying to find the correct things to put together. And I can only assume that was it. I've never received any notification from anybody, so.
Yeah. Okay, well. Michelle, he did the right thing, didn't
he,
Tom?
He did a great job. There's people out there trolling to piece together more and more information about you. They go out to the web, they start to gather information, put together profiles on people. They add outdated addresses. They can have the last four digits. They're just trying to find that caller that they can hook into providing the rest of the information, and now they have their target. And they can go, you know, do identity theft and start racking up credit and spending lots of money in your name and stuff. So it's great. Don't piece together any more information for people when they're calling. If there's a notification, they can send it to you and put it in the mail, and they'll have your current information. You don't need to give them anything else.
That's exactly right. Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah. I did just want to mention one more thing. I have a playhouse here in Hazelhurst, Wisconsin, and I get a lot of the companies that I deal with. They will almost monthly send me a notification to change my email address. I mean my password.
Yeah.
So they automatically change my password. They inform me to change the password, or else they won't continue with the account. So I think that's a really good thing that companies are doing, and it would be great if a lot more of them did that. So.
Yeah, good points. Thank you. Thanks a lot for calling. That sounds like a good plan, Sandy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And everybody's becoming more and more aware of what it takes to protect accounts from hacking and identity theft.
Joe in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Joe.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Good morning. And say, a quick question. Recently got divorced. My wife and I filed together on our tax returns. And on my end, I made an error. My wife emailed me, giving me the form from the IRS saying that I didn't claim something, which was accurate. And they said I could dispute it if I wanted to. So I paid it. And this all happened within the last week. And within the same week, I get three emails from companies saying they can help with delinquent taxes. Is that just a fluke that I would get those in the same week?
Hmm. Does the IRS give out any information like that?
I'm wondering whether there was some kind of court order filed that would have public information. Otherwise, it could be a fluke. I'm just trying to think of how they would have gotten that kind of information.
You know, could have been that somebody had been, you know, viewing my email, it'd have to be in my email account because that's how I received the information. That,
yeah.
There was an error.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea to change your passwords on your email account just in case.
Right.
Yeah, I think that would be, probably a good idea. Thanks for calling, Joe. Appreciate your call. We have more callers online. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jeff in Madison shot an email in and said he likes to use the last eight characters, or maybe the first, or the middle characters of the URL of the site that needs the password. Every site you visit has a different password, and you don't have to remember it. Just read it off the screen. What do you think?
I don't know about that one. You always like to mix it up and change it, so I don't know how the frequency of changing that password would work. And just keeping them fresh, and as long as they're long, if he's mixing in characters with that, because if it's just verbatim of what's up there, I would think that would be pretty easy to hack because it would be a common phrase or a common something right in front of individuals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would, I don't know, I'd be leery of that one. But Jeff likes it and uses it.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's go to Susan in Madison. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good morning. I am calling with information about the earlier caller with concern about AARP Fraud Watch Network.
Yeah.
I received in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks maybe, a little pamphlet brochure from AARP, apparently, that's entitled AARP Watchdog Alert, A Guide to Common Scams and How to Protect Yourself. And inserted in the brochure is a letter to AARP members. We're pleased that you expressed an interest, which I don't think I did, but I am a member and I get their mailings, in learning more about the AARP Fraud Watch Network, a go-to resource for information about how to spot and avoid scams, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. You sign up, if you sign up by October 31st at an AARP Fraud Watch site, you'll get a free copy of our book, Protecting Yourself Online for Dummies. So I'm just calling for to give you information. This seems to be on AARP type letterhead with their address in New York. The person who signs it, it is a woman whose title is Fraud Watch Network at AARP.org. So I don't know about getting a phone call, which I think the previous caller had said was part of his experience. I would not like to get a phone call myself.
But the printed, to get something in the mail, that could still also be a scam, though, could it not?
Yeah, we just see so much of the fraudulent phone calls where the caller is pretending to be somebody with a legitimate business or charity. So I would just be very, very careful about responding to any kind of unsolicited phone call like that.
Yeah. But a script, but is something in the mail? You really need to. You would also need to check on that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you always want to follow up because there's all sorts of imitation mail that's sent out or enticements and things. So when we get that complaint from the gentleman about the call, and if this, if Susan wants to file a complaint or send us the materials, you know, we can take a look and check on it, the legitimacy, and follow up with the consumers that way. Other sources are to go directly to AARP and ask them the questions. You know, place the phone call if you're a member and ask the local chapter program or go to their website and look and see if they have a new sub-program that they're doing, because if it's legitimate, they're going to be promoting it from their headquartered website and through their chapters.
Talking today with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, taking a look at password protection and other consumer protection topics and issues with them. You can join us at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at consumer issues with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Lots of callers online. We're getting emails, and email address, by the way, is talk@wpr.org or Facebook. Go there, The Larry Mueller Show. It's the title of our Facebook page. And Brendan in Brookfield's on the phone, so let's go there. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Michelle. Hey, Sandy.
Hi.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Call.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, of course. Thanks for taking the call. This is kind of on the coattails of the AARP discussion. I moved from a house in Milwaukee to a house in Brookfield and was going to change my cable service, so I called Time Warner Cable and didn't have the number of my phone, so just Googled, went with the first result, and ended up talking to an individual who I thought was representing Time Warner, but started asking for credit card information, Social Security, asked a lot of strange questions before even getting to my address. And so I grew suspicious on the phone and was driving, luckily. So said, you know what, I don't have any of that information readily available. I'm going to let you go, and I'll try and get a hold of you later. And he tried to keep me on the phone. And so even if the company is a well-known company, it still seems that there can be some how do we say, shysters who can maybe impersonate or make it seem as though they're acting on behalf of somebody.
Yeah, and we're losing you, Brandon, so I'm going to go to Sandy for a comment.
Yeah, this is something that we hear about a lot, these fake Google ads. And you have to be very, very careful that you're going to the actual company that you're looking for and not be diverted off into some who knows who he was actually talking to. So we've heard from people, for instance, who have looked online for information from the DMV and have found themselves on, instead of dmv.gov, dmv.com or dmv.org, and they're charged additional money for a copy of a Wisconsin DMV form or something that they easily could have gotten for free.
There you go. Thanks again for calling. Hans in Sturgeon Bay, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling on behalf of a friend. Her identity was stolen as to be used or was used at a hospital for a procedure for which she was then billed for the copay or deductible. But it said it was billed to Medicare or Medicaid, I don't recall. And she contacted them, and they didn't have any record with her information, but it appeared as if it was being billed, but it had been billed to them. So I was wondering if that was possible, and also if a complaint could be lodged through your department, your organization.
Yeah, Michelle?
It's happened out of state.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, I would still, Hans, have her file a complaint, or him, whatever the friend is, with us for our Office of Privacy Protection, and we can sort through, you know, where it happened. It may come into a jurisdictional issue, and we can work with our partner agencies from other states in referring that or see if there's something we can do. But we're going to want to go deeper into making sure and helping walk through the steps of making sure there isn't other identity theft going on there as it relates to credit. But what you're talking about is medical identity theft, and that can be very serious. And so if that ever happens, you want to make sure you get into your medical records and review those, and that there aren't things attached to her medical record that would cause her any injury in an emergency, such as an allergy to a medication, not being they're a wrong blood type. It can get very complicated and very extremely dangerous very fast. So she's going to want to do some extra, but file that complaint.
There we go.
Okay. Thank you for your advice.
Yeah. And the 800 number is 800-422-7128. Or you could go online to datcp.wi.gov for that. There you go. And Lori in Hills Corners. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, an old friend calling back, Larry. I'm calling, though, because I heard a story yesterday that, it was a talk about grandchildren that was on one of your promotions just now. But this one was a call supposedly came from a grandson. The person receiving the call thought it sounded sort of like her grandson. She says, "Is this you, Travis?" She had given the name of her grandson to the caller.
Yeah.
And then it went on from there. I got in trouble, and I don't let my parents know, please. And the police have me now, and I'm in order to get out, I guess I got to have $3,000, and you have to meet the policeman at CVS. Have you heard that one?
Oh, yes. Yeah. She didn't do it, did she?
It took a long time. She's making phone calls, but no, she didn't do it.
Oh, good.
And unfortunately, Sandy, you've had a lot of stories like that.
That one has been around for a long, long time, but people still fall victim to it, and it preys on a grandparent's worst fears that a beloved grandchild is in trouble. And of course, the immediate reaction is, well, of course I'll help my grandchild. please, if you have elderly friends or neighbors, make sure they know about this scam. That's the only way that we're ever going to keep people from becoming victims. And every year we do hear from people who lose tens of thousands of dollars to the scam. I want to mention, Larry, that we have a Wisconsin Senior Guide available.
Oh,
it's a small booklet that goes through a lot of the more common scams. It's free online if you go to our website, datcp.wi.gov, or you can call that toll-free number and we'll put one in the mail to you. It's free of charge, and it's a small size, easy to just leave it by your phone so you can refer to it. But it's really something that every senior citizen in the state should have.
Oh, yeah, and just have it right. Read it and then have it next to the phone.
Right,
read it first and then put it next to the phone. Oh, man. Lori, again, thank you so much for calling. I want to give Bob in Wisconsin Dells a chance to join us with his story. Hi, Bob.
How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
So y'all were mentioning, like, threatening emails and calls and things like that, and then I felt compelled to call because this has got to be the funniest and weirdest that I've ever come across. My brother is incredibly tech-savvy. He's FAA-certified, wires planes, so he's good with technology. Well, he received an email in horribly broken English from a guy claiming to be a hitman.
And a hitman.
A hitman. They pay me X amount to kill you, and I take half, I call off. So he emails him back claiming that he's a really depressed redneck who just lost his job and is looking for someone to take it out on. And he'd already traced the email. I don't know how you do that, but he traced it back to where it came from. And he sent this off, and he says, I think I'll just take you out instead. The guy emails back, says, you know, basically, no, I'm serious. I real hitman. He says, so he responds back with, well, I see you're contacting me from, you know, like Joe's Internet Cafe in Zimbabwe. I'll see you Wednesday. And that's where the emails ended.
Oh, my.
Some of these can be just pretty outlandish.
A hitman. Oh, my. Well, that one I haven't heard. Have you heard that one, Sandy?
I've heard very similar ones.
Oh.
And this is called extortion fraud.
Oh.
But sometimes they'll claim to, well, they claim all kinds of ridiculous things. And your brother may have felt safe knowing that the potential crook was across the world. But it can be very frightening for some people, and this is one that people can fall victim to. So, again, any email or phone call out of the blue where that no matter what the beginning of the pitch is, it ends up in a request for wire transfer or payment by prepaid debit card, it's obviously a scam.
I thought
it was a funny one, though.
Yeah, it was. Thanks, Bob. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, man. Joe in Token Creek, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I went farther than most people. Most people hang up. I didn't. And so I actually transferred some money through a credit card to a company that was, after I found out, were working out of the Philippines but charging to a company in Australia. For antivirus protection on a computer. And it was a weak moment because I'm still working under the XP platform, which is prone to a lot of virus and what have you. But anyway, I had a lot of conversations with the folks, but really got to the point where doing a $300 transfer on a credit card, but they were going to give me all kinds of things in the mail or going to ship and whatever. So since I haven't gotten any of that stuff, do I have any claims to go back through the credit card to help support me on a fraud claim?
I would definitely file a dispute with your credit card company. So from the time that your bill posts the charge, you have 60 days to file a dispute with the credit card company, and they have their process formally set out, and you need to call them or read your bill to determine what website you would go to and follow that process to put that dispute out there, and hopefully you can get that fee waived, credited back to you, and that they will then turn around and go back because you didn't receive delivery of the goods.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm hoping, that that's part of the contract, that they have to deliver what they promised.
And yeah, that's what the dispute process is all about. Yep.
Good.
Yep. Thank you. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And I've had, frankly, pretty good experience with credit card companies. I mean, if there's a bad, if there's something here and I didn't charge it, I've had, with all no questions asked, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Change, and then I've gotten new credit cards.
That dispute process is set down in federal law. So, that yeah, they're pretty good about respecting that law.
Yeah, they are. Laura in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
And what can we do for you?
Well, I have a quick question. This was probably a couple months ago, but I had clearly people from overseas calling and calling and calling multiple times in a day about, you know, whatever they wanted to try and get me to do. But more commonly, I have found out that they'll ask for, let's say, my husband, and I'll say he's not home. They'll hang up right away. And then they'll call back, you know, 2 hours later, and they'll ask for him again. And then I pretend like I'm him because they just asked for his name. And so then they go into this big, long spiel, but they don't do it in English. They do it in whatever language that they're supposed to be speaking. And then I don't, you know, of course, then I hang up on them. But I'm wondering, you know, is this common? Is this, you know?
Yeah, is this a common thing here? I've never heard that one. Where they start in on a different language. Oh,
that,
my goodness.
That's very strange. You know, it can be really tempting to engage with these people and see how much they'll tell you and what you can figure out about where they are and what they want. But the best thing you can do is to hang up immediately as soon as you understand.
Talking today with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Ryan, and they'll be with us right up until 12:30. Let's take a quick look at the news. In the course of an average week or month, you and I act as consumers many times, so much so that I think it's easy not to be vigilant about the monthly bills and everyday interactions. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happily, most of our transactions go just fine. We get what we pay for and don't get charged more than we should. But there are other times when those problems develop, and then we're lucky to have people who know what they're doing to help us out. And today we have with us Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michelle, great to have you with us.
Always good to be here, Larry.
And Sandy Chalmers, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. And Sandy, thank you for joining us again as well.
Good to be here.
Join in with your questions. All of our lines are filled right now, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. Augie in West Bend, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for putting me on. I received a call last week from a gentleman who gave me his number and repeated it to call back, and he told me that that there was an IRS arrest warrant out for me and that I needed to call that number that day. This was on a message. I didn't recognize the number, so I didn't answer it. I just wondered if you had seen anything about this or if I should be running.
It wasn't the IRS, I'll bet, Sandy.
Well, this IRS imposter scam has gotten to be a real plague in the last couple of years. And unfortunately, a lot of people have fallen victim to it. And what they'll do is call and say, I'm so-and-so with the IRS. They may give you their badge number. Your caller ID may show IRS. So, you know, it can be very convincing, and nobody wants to get crosswise with the IRS. But, of course, they'll then ask you for payment by credit card or wire transfer, and that's the red flag because the IRS doesn't call people directly and ask for payment by wire transfer. So,
no.
But it's really gotten to be a difficult situation. And the way that it's been evolving most recently is that the first call will be from the quote-unquote IRS, and they'll say, if you don't pay us right now, we're going to take your driver's license away. And then you'll get a follow-up call from somebody saying they're from the DMV, and your caller ID will show DMV. So it's, you know, it gets more and more sophisticated, but just know that this is a very, very prevalent scam right now.
Yeah. Thanks, Augie. Yeah, appreciate the call. Herb in Milwaukee, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I recently have a problem with a charity that solicits donations online. It's, I can't remember the name of it right now. But anyway, they ask for donations online, and then they ask for your credit card. But when they ask for the authorization number from the Discover card, for example, it's Donors Choose. That's a charity. They send in that it's a purchase of $1, not the actual amount that you're donating. So when we donated a large sum of money, we actually went over our credit limit.
Hmm.
Are you there?
Yeah, yes. So
if they had authorized the donation by the actual amount that was listed on the laptop, the credit card at some point would have denied any more transactions because we were at our credit limit. But because they are requesting an authorization number and an approval number and only sending in $1 per transaction, and then at a later time they send in the total amount, the Discover card said, well, we have an approval number, put them all through. So what if you're over?
Mm-hmm. Well, I just in there's a gas station I stop at, and the first couple times I noticed on my credit card was suddenly there's this dollar charge from this gas station, and then later the charge comes, the full amount comes, and it has happened at the same gas station I've stopped at a couple, three times.
The only thing I'm thinking is that they're verifying that the credit card is legitimate and that the charges will go through, especially
exactly
with the gas station situation, because they're going to want to make sure it's not a bad card before you drive away with your gas.
Yeah.
But with the charity, the only thing I'm thinking is kind of like restaurants. They scan your card and then they bring you the bill where you can add the tip. So they go back and then add the tip amount to the total bill type situation where they're just, you know, keeping the tab open to charge the additional amount so there's not two charges. I would talk to the charity about it. Talk to your credit card company. We don't regulate the credit card industry at Consumer Protection, so I don't know all the details behind the regulations that exist there.
Where would you go for that? Is there another office, office?
Yeah, it may be under federal law, but the Department of Financial Institutions has many of the financial regulations.
Yeah, Department of Financial Institutions. That's the one to go to. So if you go online and put in Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions, I don't happen to have the site, but you're going to go right to it, I would think.
Yeah, you should come up with a look for whatever it is, but a .gov.
Yeah, there should be a .gov at the end of it.
And then you should find out information, phone numbers there.
All right, Herb, good luck. John in Prairie du Sac, thanks for calling. Hi. What can we do for you?
I would like a state and or federal no-call number that is authentic and is substantial. We thought we were on them, but we're getting undue amount of calls that should have been blocked. Could I have either of those numbers, please, or both?
Yeah, sure.
Sure, John. You can register your number at 1-888-382-1222. And if your it also verifies if you're already on the list. So you have to call from the phone you want registered when you're calling. There's also a website for everyone else, and that's donotcall.gov.
Is this number you gave me state or federal?
That's the federal list, which is also the state list.
Okay.
The state of Wisconsin uses the Wisconsin portion of the federal list as our no-call list, so it's 2-for-1.
We'll verify again to make sure we're on.
Yep, it's 1-888-382-1222.
Thank you kindly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The problem is, isn't it, though, with these robo-type calls, they can get through regardless, or is...
Yeah, the law doesn't actually block the phone call from happening. And we've talked many times about how technology really has opened this whole thing up to people sitting overseas somewhere. If they have a laptop or a prepaid phone, they can blast calls anywhere in the world very cheaply. So that's why we're getting so many of these fraudulent calls. It just makes it, technology has made it very easy for international criminals to take advantage of us.
Yeah, unfortunately. Scott in Door County, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. I have a brief question. A few years back, I was providing my Social Security card to a new employer for a W-4, and I somehow this is a card I've managed not to lose for many decades, so it's an older card. And I noticed on there that it said, for federal tax purposes only, not to be used for identification. So later that day, I was signing up for internet service, and they asked for my social. And I mentioned that to them, and I said, well, you know, according to my card, you can't ask for that number. It's for tax purposes only. And, you know, I wasn't really determined to play hardball with them because I knew who they were, but I was curious what they would say. And essentially they told me with no Social Security number, they would not provide service. So I'm wondering what the law actually is there. I mean, we use our Social Security card for everything these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, according to the card, that's not supposed to be the case.
Yeah.
Well, the Social Security number is used by all these entities to do verification of your credit and that you're a good credit risk for them. So whether it's a cable company, a telecommunications company, your cell phone, your landline, they're extending credit to you. And so they want to make sure that you're a good risk, and they run a credit history. And that's...
Well, I understand that. I guess I was wondering, since it says right on the card, you know, for tax purposes only, can they deny me service if I don't provide the number?
Oh, yeah.
They can, because they aren't verifying credit there, and they want to make sure that the accounts are appropriate. You can ask them if there's alternatives or other means, but they have the right to determine which customers are appropriate risks for them, if you'd like.
And I guess I'm wondering, is that, you know, this card is probably 30 years old. Do new cards even say that anymore, or is that kind of a past?
That's something we'd have to check with the Social Security Administration about. I don't.
I don't even know where my old. So I guess it's in
Larry. You need to know where your card is.
I know the number, but I don't. I don't know where the card is. An old card. I'm with you, Scott. I've got an old card too, and I'm.
Okay.
And I never. Well, you're not supposed to keep it in your billfold.
No, it's in that secure spot.
Yeah, it's so secure I couldn't even tell you where it is. probably somewhere in the house. Oh man, thanks again, Scott, for calling. Joanne in Winona, Minnesota. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I have a question about calling overline when you're making a motel reservation or a hotel reservation.
Yep.
They ask for a guarantee by holding my credit card. I have to give them the credit card number, and that kind of always scares me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they do. They want to make sure you're going to show up because they're holding that room for you, and if it's a sellout night, and they will charge the room if you don't honor the cancellation policy. So it's similar to the extension of credit with the last caller, as far as if you want to take advantage of their service, they want to secure the room somehow. Yeah.
So should I give them my credit card number or my debit card number?
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that part. Your credit card number.
Yeah.
Credit card number.
Yeah.
There's more security with that then?
Well, that doesn't access your own personal money. That's extensions of credit, so you can always file a dispute if you need to, and the money doesn't necessarily disappear the same way it could with a debit card. There's protections there, but a credit card is just better.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You know, just as an aside on this, I have gone to when I'm making hotel reservations, I call the hotel directly rather than use one of the 800 numbers that goes somewhere, but it's not to the hotel. And I often get better service when I go right straight to the hotel company. To the hotel itself.
I've heard that many times, and I've also heard that you sometimes can get a better deal by going directly to that motel.
That's the other reason I use it, because I found that to be the case. Let's go to Dave in Oshkosh. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question and a comment. I'll make them quick. My question is, the other day I had received a phone call from, it was an automated voice that said they were offering me a better interest rate on my credit card, and if I wanted to accept it, to press 1. Well, I pressed 1 only for the sole reason that I have never had a credit card in my life, and I wanted to know if I was getting to be a victim of identity theft. As soon as I explained this to the actual person on the other line, they hung up the phone on me. And I tried calling it back, and it wouldn't go through. It was basically a deadline. Where should I report that to, or should I? I mean, is that something that I even can report? I don't know what to do about that. And my comment, again, I'll just make it quick, was I actually used to work for a telefundraising company, which is technically considered different from a telemarketing company. And these no-call lists that a customer or a caller a few calls back was asking about, saying that they shouldn't be, that they're getting them and they shouldn't be, telefundraising companies are actually exempt from federal no-call lists. You need to go to that individual company every time they call and ask that individual company to remove you from their call list. And that's all I have to say. I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Comments, Michelle?
Well, on the comment about the charity calling, that's true. Charities are exempt from the Wisconsin and the federal no-call list, so they can make calls. But if they try and sell you something other than just a donation, then that's not true. So it depends how that call honors or plays out. And then as far as the question with the interest rate, that's a very popular robocall that's happening and kind of peaks and valleys. And don't hit any buttons. Don't. Sorry, Dave. You don't want to hit any buttons because that just puts you on a list. You're now a potential for them. You're very valuable in that. You're another lead. You're probably going to lead to many more robocalls. So just hang up the phone when that happens, regardless of how curious you are.
There you go. Kathy in Marshfield, what's on your mind?
I'm getting an awful lot of calls from charities, you know, because they're not blocked, and especially related to, like, the armed services or law enforcement. I mean, it's just unbelievable, Purple Hearts, VFW, Wounded Warriors, Paralyzed Veterans, Wounded Athletes, law enforcement widows, you know, all that kind of stuff. How can you tell what's actually a bona fide charity? Because, I mean, I think everybody's so sensitive now about donating to the law enforcement and to the service members. So how can you tell what's real?
Yeah,
some of these charity groups can be very, very aggressive in their marketing. And it seems like you've given a donation at one point to one of these groups, and now they all have your number. One thing you can do is go to the Department of Financial Institutions website. They regulate charities in the state of Wisconsin, and these charities should be registered in the state of Wisconsin. So that's one thing you can check. Otherwise, there are a number of private groups that review charities, and you can always ask questions like, what percentage of your budget is spent in marketing and fundraising? How much of my donation will actually go to a wounded veteran or a law enforcement widow?
But they're supposed to tell you.
Yes, they are. If you have a concern that this is a fraudulent charity, that it's not a charity at all, but just some crook trying to get their hands on your money, you can file a complaint with us, and we'll follow up on it for you.
Yeah. We kind of, here at the, and I imagine throughout the state, but at least at the university, we have a Partners in Giving program. And the Partners in Giving program, I think this people or the agencies that are listed in there are, I think, have all been vetted. So if you're you have that through an employer, it's a lot safer. I think you can feel pretty assured that you've got a good batch of organizations you want to give your money to.
And we've had many callers to this show say that they will not donate in response to a cold call.
Yeah.
They always say, please send me the information so I can review it. And they usually don't hear anything.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I've done when I've actually picked up the phone and talked to somebody. So it's a good way to do it, and they really don't want to send you material. They want to sell you right there on the spot. David in Sister Bay. Hi, thanks, David, for calling.
How you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, well, there's a national radio show that talks about finance and has great suggestions. I don't remember the guy's name, but he has commented several times that the difference between debit cards and credit cards, there really is none if yours is a debit card. You don't get the full consumer protection with a regular credit card. Now, of course, when you go to the store, they'll say debit or credit, and you pick credit thinking that you're going to get more protection. But he said, no, these are kind of bogus. The banks say that you get more, but it's really not a real credit card. Can you comment on that?
All right, so a debit card, you're saying if you use a debit card like a credit card?
Well, supposedly my debit card is also
a credit card.
For credit, yeah. If I say credit, I have to sign for it. If I say debit, I have to put in a PIN number. But supposedly, even if I say credit, I'm not getting the full federal consumer protection that I would if I had a regular credit card.
Yeah, well...
Yeah, those are federal laws that we don't have any jurisdiction over. I think it's safe to say that with a credit card, your liability is more limited than with a debit card. And without going into the details, I think that's a generalization that's accurate.
I tend to use my credit card. I don't use a debit card very often, to be perfectly honest, just because I know I'm going to get better protection with a credit card. And Kari in Spring Valley, hi, have you got a quick one?
Hi, it's Carrie. Yes, it's kind of an old-fashioned issue, what I call the proverbial meat truck, these refrigerated trucks that kind of go town to town, door to door, and they have these boxes of meat. And, you know, 20 years ago I bought this great deal. You get a hamburger, steaks, and some shrimp. And it turns out it's kind of nasty, some of it. And so, well, live and learn, never do that again. And there's no recourse. The truck's long gone. Well, the other night, my boyfriend ran across this meat truck in town and purchased Christmas presents for all his siblings.
Oh.
And I'm just wondering, you know, there's no USDA stamp on any of this stuff. And but it says, like, U.S. inspected. And the local officer said, well, they left town because we wanted them to get a permit, which is free, and they wouldn't do it. So what are the laws around this?
Ah, man, if they wouldn't get a free permit.
This could be several issues, and there could be some fraud involved or misrepresentations, but it's also a potential food safety issue. And we have in our building a division of food safety, and we would work together. If you'd like to file a complaint, we would definitely follow up on it.
And to file a complaint, it would be 800-422-7128, 422-7128, or online, DATCP, for Department of Ag, Trade, Consumer Protection. So DATCP.wi.gov. And on that note, we're done. But you're coming back in a month to be with us again.
Sounds great.
I hope so. They'll be back. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We'll have them back again in a month, and we'll talk some more about consumer protection issues. And certainly... we have lots of good things coming up tomorrow. Oh, my goodness. Tomorrow's Friday already. Oh,
that it is.
Wow. Garden Talk with Sharon Morrissey. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.